Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Once again, Susie Lavis is with us. She is the CFO of Lavis & Associates, and she's been doing my taxes for years and years and has gotten lots of referrals from me and other real estate investors, so she's very familiar with what we do. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, I was just thinking, sometimes when they change tax laws, they think something's going to be revenue positive, and it doesn't turn out that way. And one specific thing was when there was only 1 year, and I don't remember the year, but they changed capital gains to the equivalent of the highest personal rate. And it generated way less revenue because those people just said, we ain't selling anything.
Yes.
And you have to be kind of careful about that. And I think that's one of the things that, you know, when you talk about the fiscal cliff, I think what they're saying is, you raise taxes and pull that much more money out of the system at this point in this economic cycle, it will be revenue negative. You'll get more tax per person and get less total tax.
Probably
so
true.
So they got to be pretty careful about that.
Absolutely.
Well, capital gains is sort of one of the topics that's got to be on the chart for them, is how do we get more revenue? What is it now, by the way? And I know it's gone way down from where it seemed like it was.
If you're actually in almost a zero tax bracket and you have a capital gain, it is zero.
It is zero.
Yeah. So on the upper end, though, it's 15%. But I want to caution you, you can't just say it's 15% because the money ends up on the front of the tax return. And then it increases adjusted gross income. And everything comes off of adjusted gross income, right? So some deductions, such as like medical, you know, you take your adjusted gross income, the first 7.5 doesn't count.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't just say 15% because other stuff happens on your return when you throw more income on it. So it could make your Social Security become taxable, possibly. You could lose some deductions. Mm-hmm. You might have alternative minimum tax. So when a client asks me about should they sell a property or a stock or whatnot, that requires a consultation. I'm going to run the numbers because just the off the top of my head answer is not a good enough one.
It starts clicking over other dominoes that you
yes.
have to go and see the whole picture.
Yes. And then also remember that those of us in California, that's just additional California tax. There is no capital gain on the state side. So that's just regular income tax.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's not nice. Okay. At what point is Social Security taxable, and does it vary with age? So if you're...
It does not vary with age.
Okay.
It varies based on how much money you have. So if you're a single person and your total income is under $25,000, that Social Security is not taxable.
Okay.
But once you have maybe a pension or maybe you have a little part-time job, that can be taxable. Another one that really throws it off... And seniors love to do this,
gambling.
So what happens with gambling is you put the winnings on the front of your return. So now your income's higher. It can now make your Social Security taxable. And where does the loss come in? Well, you have to be able to itemize your deductions. Well, often a senior is not itemizing, so they don't get the deduction for the loss. So the moral of the story is, if you're going to gamble, gamble little. Don't get those 1099s or the W-2G, rather.
Wow, yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
Interest deductions. Now, long, long ago, we were writing off interest on credit cards, right?
Yes.
I don't remember when that stopped, but maybe the 80s or something.
I'm old enough to know that, yes.
Okay. But the holy grail of interest deductions is the real estate one.
Yes, it is.
And are they talking about that being changed? Because it was changed, right? It used to be unlimited, and then it got changed to, what, $1 million?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Only on a residence or on...
On a residence. Unlimited for rental properties, as long as the money is for that rental property.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you don't think that's going to change?
You know, there's been talk on the personal residence side. There has been talk.
Correct. I'm talking about on the rental side.
Oh, on the rental side. No. It's okay. There's no way, because that's a cost of doing business.
Yeah, it's like a business. Yeah, okay. Right. Mm-hmm. What about second home deductible interest? Is that still deductible, or does that go under this umbrella of $1 million?
That goes under the umbrella.
Okay. So yes. It's, you can't have two $1 million. Okay.
That's correct.
What about charity deductions? Because we were talking about capping deductions. They're talking about, let's say, all right, you get a little basket of deductions and it's 25 grand or whatever it is. Well, that could be a very significant thing if it took out charity.
It would be a very big thing. I can't imagine the lobbyists will allow that to happen.
Okay.
I can see in my practice, just with everyone being a little less liquid, that I can see that where they're making up the difference is they're giving less to charity. So I know that that's already a problem. So I can't imagine that could totally go away, because really our economy relies on the nonprofits in a lot of ways. So if the nonprofits really didn't have the funds to function and handle a lot of the social things that they do,
it would be an expense to the government.
Exactly.
Now, most of that is funded by people that are wealthy?
No.
Really?
No.
A charity?
Yeah, no.
Okay, I didn't know that.
It is really folks that were raised with those values.
Okay.
And it could be a very, very low income family that were raised to tie 10%, that have that value system.
Okay.
And there are some folks that make a lot of money, and no, they do not, they don't give it away.
Okay. Well, that's kind of nice to know. So it's so it's sort of like, that's pretty well, and that's a good thing, because I was thinking, well, if you're going to tax people that make all this money, then they're probably not going to have the desire to give the rest of it away.
Oh, I see.
Okay. Sale of a residence, we had talked about off air, and I had intended to cover it, because I was always amazed that it even existed. And I mentioned off air, I had to make a phone call to Robert Bruss. He's passed on, but he was just the brightest guy I knew. And I was just in shock that that could even be possible, because I was thinking, how many states could ever take advantage of that? So it seemed like lobbyists from five states went, let's slip this one by, because that'll be helpful to me.
Yes.
But it's still in place, and yes. And you don't think that that's likely to go away?
I personally have not heard that one being a target.
Okay. And, you know, when you start thinking about that, if you do happen to live in one of those states where that might be, in fact, possible, if we're going to start ramping up again, that's not a bad way to go.
It's a lovely way to go. In fact, I have some younger folks, sometimes in the construction industry, and I've always shared with them, isn't that a lovely way to accumulate some wealth tax-free? So the idea is acquire a home. You know, we've always heard location, location. So a decent neighborhood, something that would maybe require some work, live in it, fix it up for 2 years, sell it. A single person can pocket $250,000. A married couple can pocket $500,000. In the old days, there was a requirement to repurchase.
Right.
There's no requirement to repurchase. You can put that in your pocket tax-free. And then you could go repeat the process. You could do it every 2 years. It's lovely.
Well, the old days, it was one time.
Right.
Right. You had to be 55. You had to be 55, right. Or you had to buy a more expensive house.
Yes.
So that's, I mean, all this, gone. This is a radical change.
It's,
I mean,
beautiful.
That's why when I looked at it, I went, well, holy mackerel, this is a game changer, because this is really a ticket to make a $250,000 a year for free.
But Bruce, I've shared this strategy with a number of folks, and what's interesting is it's your home and it's personal. And not too many people actually want to move every 2 years.
Yeah, here I am sounding all excited about it, and I've lived in the same house for 25 or 30 years. So
exactly.
Yeah, I certainly saw it go up and down, and made that decision knowing we could have cashed out, and we didn't on purpose.
Yep.
Okay. I may be changing that strategy. I really might. One of the things that's facing a fair amount of investors, and it's also been true of owner-occupants, is they've had short sales.
Yeah.
Those are two different tax ramifications, I think. So
yes.
The owner-occupant has been under one set of rules up until December 31st of this year.
Yes.
And the other, the investor, hasn't been under that same set of rules. So in your tax year, did you see some surprise faces when they realized, wow, I have a tax bill?
I do get to see them though, but it's usually before the transaction happens because of course you're in my life, I talk real estate a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been talking it up before those things actually happen. And so we've done some planning before so that way they can decide, you know, if they were going to let something go, what would be the tax ramification? Okay, here's what it would require you cash flow wise to continue to make payments versus mm-hmm. letting it go. And here's your tax bill. And, you know, there's a couple code sections, though, you know, even though the one for personal residences is to sunset, that one, when I attend seminars, they think that one will be extended, but we'll see. But on the other, there's two other code sections that can be used. And one is if you can really show that you're insolvent to the extent of the debt, or if you filed bankruptcy. So those are two options. Unfortunately, the investor often isn't insolvent when you look at retirement assets included in the mix, because you have to include those. So, and then they typically don't want to do bankruptcy. So then they're looking at a tax bill. No kidding. There's no way around that one.
Well, you know, getting a tax bill you expect is one thing. Getting a tax bill when you're going to go off on your own and do something, that's, I guess that's why you ought to have an advisor in your life.
Absolutely.
Huh? yeah, that's, I had my first audit when I didn't have you on my team, and the IRS agent looked at all the stuff I had done. I don't know if I ever told you the story. And I had done a lot of property. He says, "Oh, you do a lot of this." He says, "You must be a dealer." And I thought it was a compliment. And I said, "Yeah." And I found out, oh, no, that's not a good thing. So, oops. Now, you said the word bankruptcy. I was sort of surprised that a bankruptcy, does it do away with an IRS lien?
Not necessarily an IRS lien, but the cancellation of debt. So if the debt is included in the bankruptcy, then it doesn't become taxable. The cancellation of debt doesn't become taxable.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Any talk of messing with 1031 exchanges?
I haven't heard that one either.
Yeah, that would be nice to be left alone.
Yeah.
So let's just role play this thing and have a personal vested interest in the answer. And I think a few of the people listening might. Let's say you say, okay, I'm gonna go for that. I'm gonna sell the home every 2 year deal,
mm-hmm.
and you exceed the number. So let's say you're single and your house sells for $400,000 profit. The $250,000 is free.
Yes.
The $150,000 is what?
Long-term capital gain.
Okay.
We just don't know right now what long-term capital gain will be. And then, of course, if you're single and over the 200 or married over the 250, then you'll have that additional 3.8% on top of that. On top of your tax rate that looks to be increasing.
Well,
so yeah, you really have to make some, not under the table, you really have to make some tax-free income to deal with some of this. I mean, that is really going to be a viable strategy.
It really will, because you know the one bucket is going to get taxed to death. You'd like to have at least some bucket not get taxed at all.
No kidding.
So the blended thing is, okay, we're back to where we were.
No kidding.
I think that's really important thing about any of the changes is that you usually can go, okay, I have to change my game plan, but at least there's a game plan to pursue.
Yes.
And that's kind of nice. As a matter of fact, I wonder if it doesn't force investments in directions that it might not otherwise go.
Well, I'll tell you, the talk in my office is the Roth conversion. Now, we've been talking about that for a very long time. And let's face it, not a lot of folks have been taking advantage of that. And why is that? Because not too many folks either have the cash flow to pay the tax or are willing and trusting enough to pay the tax.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think IRS thought that they were going to see quite a number of those. And I was at a financial conference recently, and the question was raised, how many of your clients are doing these conversions? And not too many clients are doing them. And then they changed it and they said, okay, you as advisors, how many of you advisors are doing conversions? Not a hand went up.
Really?
And then when they started, you know, questioning the audience, why aren't you doing it? When you can pencil it out and you can see financially, it really does make sense. There's not too many people want to give up the money and trust that if they do, that it will remain non-taxable.
You know, that's a scary sentence because that was sort of the deal.
Yes.
And you really don't want to think that your government can do that.
Personally don't feel, I don't feel that way.
Okay.
I personally feel that if you do this Roth conversion, I truly believe you're going to be fine. All the talks, like even when you hear folks talk about, oh, Social Security is going to run out of money or blah, blah, blah. Those things cannot happen.
Well, we already know they don't have any money, so they'll just
print other
money.
Out. Yeah, exactly. But they'll do some crazy stimulus or they'll do something. There's no way to make that fall apart.
No,
and so I feel the same way about Roth. I hope that's true.
Yeah. But I have heard those suspicions, and I just thought, wow, that would be a major breach of trust right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you sort of can't go there.
Somebody would probably be assassinated if that happened.
I actually talked to somebody about that, and I said I wouldn't want to be the person making that decision. I really wouldn't, because that'd be basically theft.
Yes.
And I don't think you could do that to too many people without somebody not being really, really unhappy.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's good to know. Now, every year you do my taxes, I have this odd line that's called alternative minimum tax that sneaks off with some more money just because I can't explain why. Mm-hmm. Can you help explain why? What is that?
It's a lovely little loop. They only want you to get your tax bill so low.
So deductions, following every deduction legally and everything. If you get too much of a good thing,
they'll still limit you. They will still limit you. Now, that is one of the scary things that's out there on this whole fiscal cliff.
Exactly.
Is that needs to get fixed. And every year they have been fixing it to where, you know, yes, it affects some people, but not to the extent the law was written. I would imagine they'll fix it again. What's interesting is that they just haven't permanently fixed it. Mm-hmm. That they keep, you know, doing this patchwork thing. So the scuttlebutt, when you listen to folks, everybody thinks that they'll repair it again. But, you know, we'll have to see.
But it's not insignificant. I mean,
no.
If people think it is, I mean, I think just in the last 3 years, I think I've paid $45,000 to that cause.
To that cause.
Yeah. And you're kind of going, okay, that's sort of like, well, just because here's your extra tax, and you just think, that sort of adds up.
It really does.
Okay. Now is
and
that...
And there's only so much you can do about it.
Right.
Yes.
I don't even, I don't pretend to understand the formula, so I couldn't sit there and go, okay, well, I can avoid this because of this. I don't even understand it enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Any year-end tax moves that are smart?
It's the opposite of what you've always been told.
Okay.
In all the years, I've always told you, put off, you know, taking income if you can. So, and pay as many bills now as you can and get your taxable income as low as possible. Well, this year's the exception. We're going to do the opposite. I would, in myself included, I'm going to, you know, make sure all my clients pay me before December 31st. Well, I'm going to at least try. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to be aggressive in my spending this year. So maybe the one thing that business owners might consider, though, if they are in a business that have a lot of equipment, like maybe a backhoe operator or whatnot, mm-hmm. That big piece of equipment still might be a nice idea because we have the bonus depreciation and whatnot. Section 179 is still up in the air. We don't know what number that's going to land on right now.
For 2012 or 2013?
Yes, for 2012. We don't know what that number is going to be, but we do know that the bonus depreciation is still there.
What does that mean?
That means you can take 50% of the purchase price and just write that off.
Does that include autos?
You know the answer to this, Bruce Norris.
I know, that's why.
Because you ask me this every year, and autos is just not an easy answer. But there is some bonus depreciation on auto, yes, but it's a much... I mean, we'll have to do two radio shows just on that topic.
Because it matters how much your vehicle weighs.
And how much you use it
for business and all that stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd ask.
You thought I'd come up with some easy answer for you.
No, I knew you'd come up with that one. I just bought two cars, though, so you're going to have to work with that one.
Okay.
But I hear Honda's way more now, so it's going to be great.
Oh, okay.
So... We're all looking at this now. We're going to go after, we're not talking about now just the annual stuff, but just trying to set aside money, you know, when you're trying to retire. Are the rules, I mean, right now, I don't even know what structure I have, but let's say for what I make, we can set 25% away.
Yes.
Do you think those rules are going to change?
The numbers are out. I think they have all gotten inched up by about $500 as far as the maximum contribution. I don't think they're going to take them away. It would make more sense to me if they were more aggressive to allow us to fund more. To me, that makes more sense. You know, put the word out that forget about Social Security and plan for your own retirement.
Okay.
I would think it would make sense for them to put some additional incentives in. For the very lower income people, there's actually a credit to fund their pension plans, believe it or not. It's, and I don't know the limit. It's, you know, I don't see it too often because it is the lower income client, but I would think they would need to incent us to do those things.
When you're working for somebody, somebody else, I guess I thought there was a small amount of money. You know, I've obviously, when you're talking about 25% of, let's say, what, up to the first 200,000, that's not a small amount. But why do I have in my head there's like $7,500 or $2,500 maximum?
You're probably thinking 401k.
Okay.
Yeah. And that number changes every year too. And it's probably, I think, at the 15,000 range right now.
Okay.
A lot of this numbers I don't just keep off the top of my head.
Okay.
Yeah. And like I said, they've inched up another $500.
Okay. Now there is, I've got friends every once in a while and I just haven't said, okay, I really need to find that out. But they talk about, oh, I set a quarter million dollars because of my age in a year. And it's just like this massive funding of this program kind of late in the game.
Well, there's catch-up provisions once you're 50.
Okay.
But it's not that big. It's not like, oh my gosh, over the top huge.
I'll just load up everything I make into one of those. Okay, I don't remember what it was called, so okay. They're kind of telling me that that's what they're doing, but that doesn't mean it's right. They could be getting told some wrong stuff. And by the way, if you are told some wrong stuff by an advisor or even the IRS, you still have liability, don't you? I mean, if I call the IRS and they tell me to do something wrong, and then they say, well, that's wrong. And I say, well, you told me to do it.
It's on you.
It's still on me, yeah.
You can maybe get out of a penalty, but you're definitely not getting out of the tax.
I've got grandkids, and can you explain to me how I can set aside money for their education? How is it not taxable to them, and how is it ever deductible to me?
There's probably three ways you can, maybe more, but three easy ways.
Okay.
One, the most common one right now that everybody knows about is the 529 plan. That one is not deductible to you. And it gets to grow up in their account tax-free, provided they take the money out for education. And then the very first one that ever came out was the Coverdell IRA. And that's another thing that could sunset, because when it came out at like $500 and then it got bumped to $2,000. And I think that's on the block to see if they're going to keep it at the $2,000 range.
Okay.
But some business owners, what they're doing is if you have a child that could actually earn some money from you,
mm-hmm.
you know, do an after-school job, you could then, you know, pay your grandson.
So then it is deductible.
It's earned income, mm-hmm. and then they can open a Roth. So in order to take the earnings out without paying a penalty, of course, they have to be 59 and a half. But if you fund a Roth and you don't get a deduction, you can take your contribution out as long as that Roth has been open for 5 years.
Okay.
So I do have some business owners that are paying their children on a W-2.
Okay.
And then taking the full amount and putting it into a Roth.
Okay. I might need to hear that one again or listen to the program, but
sure.
Okay. I sort of got that one.
Yeah.
What about if you're sort of late in the game, go, oh my goodness, you know, my grandkids are not 7 anymore, they're 14, I'd like to play catch up.
With the 529, you can.
Okay.
The gifting rule is $13,000 a year, which is going to go up with inflation as well.
Okay.
But you can take 5 years of $13,000 and put it into a 529 plan.
Really?
The beautiful thing about 529 is you still stay in control as the owner, but it is off your estate as far as your gross estate.
Okay.
So that's nice.
Well, Susie, thanks for joining us. It's always fun.
Very good.
Give your phone number one more time.
951-300-9600.
Well, I really have enjoyed this. And, you know, this year is especially challenging because of looking forward to the bigger taxes. You know, we're going to have to sit down personally and go, okay, what's the game plan?
You're looking forward to visit bigger taxes. Wow.
No,
Yahoo.
I'm looking forward to avoiding them. All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.